And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. Michael Lowe could be joining us in just a moment. Today's podcast is number 62 with Roger Phillips. It's a bit of a comic relief show, and you've probably never heard him interviewed anywhere before. A different kind of show, but I think you'll like it. Last week, we had a song on our show called 25 Lights by Moot Davis, and a lot of people emailed me and sent comments that they really liked it a lot. Moot, who is a fan of the show, he was also the creator and producer, owned all the rights to that song. He gave us written permission to use it, but All in One Broadcast told me that if I played that song on the station, no matter what permission I had, they would basically remove the show. Well, needless to say, I do like the freedom of the podcast format, so I said goodbye to doing that. So there will be no more Friday night chat rooms. I'm sorry about that. We are going to figure out something else, and I will announce that later on. So, Michael, what's going on with the news this week? And welcome back, by the way.
Oh, thank you. This week we have stories about new sightings, explanations of others, and it turns out Area 51 is real after all. I'd like to remind everyone that there are links to media coverage to all of our stories in our show notes, which you can find at podcastufo.com. While there, you can sign up for our free forums where you can connect with other listeners in the Podcast UFO team to share your stories, opinions, and questions. And don't forget to visit us on Facebook, too. Now I have to breathe after all that.
That was a long one.
Yeah. That was like a legal disclaimer. All right. NASA solves mystery of recent ISS UFO. Monday, August 19th, NASA astronaut Chris Cassidy saw a literally unidentified object floating nearby the International Space Station. By the next day, NASA had posted footage and an explanation. It was an antenna cover from one of the Russian service modules. View the footage and judge for yourself.
Yeah, I watched that. Boy, that thing had such a glowing color for a while there. It really did look like something, didn't it? Did you check it out?
Oh, of course. It did glow. But it didn't look like a lot of the other weird ISS footage that is out there.
I know, the organic stuff and all.
Yeah, so I'm kind of apt, I guess, to believe NASA on this one. And maybe this gives us a baseline to compare other anomalies to.
Yeah, I'll give them this one.
Go NASA, our tax dollars at work. Finally got one right. Google claims responsibility for UFO sightings. Several Kentucky UFO sightings from last year can be explained, according to Google, by an experiment the company was running with a balloon-mounted device to provide wireless internet service. CBS affiliate WKYT is reporting that at least one man is not so sure that Google's Project Loon is responsible. Alan Epling, whom they describe as an astronomer, states that Google's equipment does not look like the object he photographed, nor does their timeline fit all of the reported sightings.
Yeah, that's right. As a matter of fact, the sightings were like a year before the project ever started. So it kind of makes me wonder in a conspiratorial type way, is Google partaking in disinformation?
I think it's time compression and the witnesses have their memories wrong.
Well,
just like Roswell.
Oh, no. Here we go again. So you're anti-conspiracy conspirist at this point.
I'm just anti-Google, to be honest.
I know you are. We've talked about that. Yeah. Have you seen the video? I mean, it's a really weird object with things moving and all kinds of stuff.
I've seen a few things. I mean, I remember that kind of mini wave of sightings in Kentucky. And I don't know that a balloon refers to all of them. I think Mr. Epling is kind of the champion of those sightings in general. Maybe he's somebody we should reach out to and see what he has to say.
Duly noted.
Ohio police issue statement on UFO report. Fremont, Ohio police were dispatched early on the morning of Sunday, August 18th, to investigate a phoned-in report of a UFO near a radio tower. Although the caller did not leave a description and officers did not see anything out of the ordinary, they did experience radio interference, and they are, for now, keeping the report open.
Yeah, I think that's pretty weird. There's no description at all of what the UFO was. He said he saw it for 10 minutes, hovering, and this is also another case of not really knowing where to report a UFO sighting.
Well, why not 911?
Well, that's what I did, and you know, when I had my one and only sighting and got absolutely nowhere, I never even thought to look online, which obviously this person must not have as well. At least it's more support when you're reporting it in a proper way.
What I'm waiting for and holding out for is the actual 911 call itself should be released if someone asks for it, particularly since this isn't going to be something that's tied up in some kind of a legal case. And because I think this kind of calls out to hear what the caller said and kind of judge what kind of state they were in, because early Sunday morning translates to very late Saturday night.
Are you talking a possibility of a little intoxication?
Yes.
Okay. Duly noted.
Yeah.
Okay.
According to a South Whidbey Record article that we have linked to in our show notes, there have been more UFO sightings over Washington's Whidbey Islands located in the Puget Sound. Although the night sighting reported may not be very exciting, it is interesting to note that it did seem to occur nearby a military installation, and that the MUFON representative contacted said most of the 197 reports received in the state over the previous 12 months had been from the Western Washington area, and about 60 were classified as unknown aerial objects.
Yes, this particular sighting didn't seem like it could be any type of experimental craft. When you read what this woman and her husband reported, this thing did like a horseshoe-type maneuver. It got really bright. It faded away. It came back, hovered for a while, and did impossible maneuvers. And I thought it was pretty funny that her and her husband said it was a hoot.
Right. But her husband, who was a military man, didn't seem to think it was a UFO, you know, so that's why this particular sighting didn't really excite me. I just thought the information about the area was a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's an area to keep an eye on.
Yeah. It's a hoot. Yeah.
It's a hoot. There you go.
Yeah.
Plus they have donut shaped UFOs out there.
Oh yeah. I saw that. I haven't had breakfast yet.
UFOs along Sino-Indian border. Indian Army troops along the border with China reported seeing mysterious UFOs on August 4th. Although some scientists suggest the troops may have seen Jupiter and Venus rising, the Indian Army has not yet officially commented. According to news coverage, there have been over 100 sightings in the area over the past several months, although there have not been any sightings for some time before the August 4th incident.
Michael, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, India and China historically don't get along very well, and there is a good amount of monitoring of their border. They don't even actually call it a border a lot of times. They because they're arguing over where that border is. So it is an area that both governments are going to be paying attention to, and they're going to be working to figure out anything they're seeing in the skies for fear of, say, you know, drones from the other country. So I think if there have been that many sightings and they're determining they're not drones or anything else, it's something we definitely need to keep an eye on. And I will be trying to find a good source for information on that in the near future. And finally, Area 51 is real, but no big deal, according to the CIA. Finally, the CIA has admitted that the legendary Area 51 is in fact real. This news comes after years of denial, even though the base has been photographed, filmed, and featured in television documentaries. The CIA states that it is merely a location to test spy planes, which, of course, has been the official explanation for the base the entire time that the base did not officially exist. There has been a great deal of media coverage of this non-event, so we linked to the Wire.com coverage because it focuses on great portrayals of Area 51 in pop culture. But on a more serious note, Martin, what do you think we can learn from the fact that it has taken years for the CIA to speak about the base that has been very obviously there the entire time?
Well, first of all, I want to say that Peggy, as soon as she saw this news breaking, she posted it on her Facebook page, and it reached 107,000 people with all the shares. It was really amazing. I mean, that's a real hot topic to begin with. But, you know, this is like explaining the elephant in the living room as far as the CIA goes, you know, and this has also been documented in the past, you know, through some of John Greenwald's work with the Freedom of Information Act released documents. It's mentioned Area 51 basically in a couple of those documents in the past. It's not like it wasn't known as far as being acknowledged by the government.
It makes me think that even if the proverbial UFOs land on the White House lawn, it could be 3 to 5 years before anybody from the government admits that they did in fact land on the White House lawn. I mean, this is just such a ridiculous quote unquote admission from the CIA.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, all the comments that are coming in on it, like, are duh, oh yeah, you know, like boring. They can't deny it.
Well, they did deny it though.
Oh, well, they did deny it. You're right.
It can or not, damn it. They did.
They did. Okay, so duly noted. All right, Michael, is that it for the news today?
I can neither confirm nor deny that that is the end of the news.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
All right, I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Okay, I'm with Roger Phillips. Well, Roger's not exactly a UFO researcher, ufologist, scientist, astronomer, but he has connections to astronomy. Well, Roger, what exactly are you?
Hi, Martin. Well, I'm an alien artist, a cartoonist.
You know that you're absolutely the first one we have on the show.
Oh, good. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah. And I have to say, your humor is... Well, of course, I'm going to ask you how you started this, but you have a great sense of humor.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I really enjoy all your little sketches you do. And can you just tell the listening audience exactly, first of all, what got you started?
Well, I used to be a product designer for a trophy and award company, and I had designed these custom sculptures. And it turned out really well, one thing I did for a client. And then after I stopped working at that last job, my father suggested to me, why don't I do it on my own? And I made a line of alien and UFO-themed sculptures, and kind of more for the serious collector. So, you know, they're not so humorous, but more very realistic-looking, depicting, you know, historic moments in UFO history. And from that... To promote them, I started to do these cartoons because that was kind of a dream of mine. So to promote the sculptures, I started drawing the cartoons, and then they took a life of their own.
Now, what made you actually go into the UFO field instead of, say, trophies?
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm sure you're familiar with that very famous mass sighting in the Hudson Valley in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one that I saw. My high school friend, this was... Gosh, in 1985, he said, run outside. There's something incredible outside. And my father and I ran out into the backyard, and we have these high-power electric lines behind our house. And there was that famous boomerang-shaped UFO hovering over those power lines going up the Taconic Parkway. So some people may be familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it was incredible. And then that really put us on, you know, on the map, or, you know, we became interested in that subject.
Now, wasn't your father an amateur astronomer?
I am.
So, oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, he got me started in it. And then, you know, starting at 15 years old, I had my first telescope from Service Merchandise. Maybe some of your older listeners will remember that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, graduated to a Celestron telescope. And now I just do it as a hobby. And I, you know, I enjoy it very much.
Yeah. Now, after you saw this sighting, did you start to really, like, try to look into the topic any way you can, you could?
I did. You know, so I read all the books that were available on that and, you know, saw the movies. And with my dad, again, we went to see that famous movie, Hangar 18.
Oh, yeah.
And that really flipped a switch in my mind.
That's a fun movie to watch still.
Oh, to this day. And yeah. It's funny because I'm actually afraid of them. I have like a fear of those little gray creatures. But when I do them in the cartoon, I make them kind of more friendly and approachable.
Yeah, yeah. For a visual, I'm going to put up on our website a link to some of your great cartoons.
Oh, terrific.
And I have to say, you know, we kind of rant about our Facebook page because people don't exactly go any further than the pictures. And let me tell you, your cartoons by far, without even thinking about it, get the most comments and likes on it than anything else we post.
Oh, that's great news. Good. I like that.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's good, but it's also a little bit lame for society in a way that, you know, we put a nice science, say, article on there.
Okay.
And people will comment on the picture only.
On the picture.
So people are very visual today, don't you think?
Absolutely. And it's funny because I was influenced by the single panel cartoons by Gary Larson and The Far Side. And so I'm pretty, you know, impatient as well. So I like to do these single panel for the most part. And I like that quick hit, you know, get in, get out, you know, in this era of Vine and Twitter, you know, with only a limited amount of characters. And it seems to be a good format for the internet age.
Yeah, I believe that's true. You know, I think the total reason for that is because there's so much information coming at us in every angle.
I agree with you. You know, what I see a lot of is a lot of repurposing of images. So somebody may take a famous character and then, you know, do some kind of twist on it. And I always wanted to be a cartoonist in the vein of Mad Magazine and The New Yorker and try to make new content. And So people are responding to it so far. And I've been doing it for about 2 years and, you know, slowly gaining a fan base. You know, and they're very vocal, and they give me a lot of suggestions and ideas.
I was going to ask you that because I have a couple of ideas for...
Oh, good. Pass them along.
And this is probably kind of a uncomfortable question, but can you make money doing this?
Very little at this point. I think the secret, you know, what I've read is that you have to be a syndicated artist. And if you'll notice, newspapers are not doing so well. And the funny section is barely a page now. And you see the same 10 strips, you know, Blondie and Garfield, you know, since I was a kid. And they're just, it's very hard to break into that realm of a professional cartoonist who can, you know, support himself.
Oh, I bet. But didn't you, one of your sculptures, wasn't it in some TV show or something?
Yeah, that was kind of neat. I plastered the internet, you know, talking to people, and I'm a big fan of the TV show called The Big Bang Theory. And in Raj Kuthrapali, he's one of the characters in the program, he has a few alien and UFO spaceship items in his condo, and they ordered my Hangar 18 sculpture, and it's actually visible on the show. So when they, you know, they shoot a scene in Raj's condo, you'll see my sculpture, you know, really in the center of the frame.
Uh-huh. Now, what are the compositions of your sculptures?
They are like little vignettes, little scenes. They're made out of resin, which is kind of like
a
ceramic type material that's poured in a mold. They're hand painted, and for instance, the one that's on the Big Bang Theory is an alien. He's closing the door on a hangar, like he's sneaking in a spaceship. You know, doesn't want people to see it. And then I have a very popular one was a crash landing, of course, in Roswell, where you see that famous image of the ship on that 45 degree angle, and the aliens are kind of shaken up from the impact, and you know, holding their head and, you know, glad to be alive, and that was a very popular one.
Well, according to myth, I should say, one did live.
Okay.
At Roswell. Yeah.
Well, yeah, so perfect. One looks more worse than the other, you know, so I don't know if that one...
He was dying, yeah.
He was dying, so he's kind of on his hands and knees, kind of holding his head.
So does any one of your fans, like, stand out to you in any type of way?
Yes, I'm happy to say Fred Hayes, who was one of the original Apollo 13 astronauts. That was based, obviously, Tom Hanks did the movie, you know,
right.
Uh-huh. Dramatization of his life. He is a fan of the strip, and I was so happy to hear that. And he's a gentleman in his 80s now, and, you know, you see pictures of him on Facebook, and he's fishing and, you know, enjoying his retirement mm-hmm. life. And I had heard that he was a fan, so I found out, like, a P.O. box, and I sent him a copy of the book, of one of my books. And he wrote me back a beautiful handwritten letter on the Apollo 13 stationery.
Oh, wow.
Letterhead. Wow. You know, I mean,
I bet you have that frame, don't you?
Yeah. You know, like, that's the kind of stuff you see on Pawn Stars or Antique Roadshow. So that's going to be framed, and I'm still using it for inspiration. And just today, my cartoon is a Apollo 13 inspired strip. Where the aliens crash into the module.
Oh, that's what happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they didn't know if it was a meteorite struck it or there was an explosion inside the ship itself. But it was a real thrill to get that letter from him. And he said how much he enjoys it. And, it, you know, at his age, and laughter is the best medicine. And he reads every day. So that was a nice thrill.
Yeah. I had a conversation a few years back with Alan Bean, who was... I can't remember what number he was on the moon. He was, you know, one of the people that made it. But he also had he was also part of a major sighting in the 1970s. If you Google it,
yes, yeah, I read about that. There are a few of those astronauts that have seen unusual things outside of the craft.
Right. Yeah. But when I contacted him about that, he did not want to talk about it.
Yeah, of course, there's still that stigma attached to it. Right. And it's funny because I spoke to some other people who are, you know, interested in the strip. And obviously people who are very serious about the subject might feel that the cartoon strip, you know, belittles it or somehow diminishes the study. And I said, well, you know, everything is poked fun of. We're poking fun of politicians and, you know, any other subject. You know, why not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I never even thought of it that way myself, you know, and in this podcast, a lot of times, you know, we try to have a little bit of humor, you know, because, you know, the whole thing, we don't have any answers for anything.
No.
And you know, why not mix it up a little bit and
I think so.
Make it more enjoyable? And
Well, part of the cartoon strip and the absurdity, I think, is that they are, you know, supposedly so highly intelligent and evolved, you know, much beyond humans.
Yeah.
That I think it's funny to see them in situations that are simple to you and I, and they might have trouble with it, like coming across a comb or you know, something that they're baffled by our way of living, you know, that they find baffling or may have trouble opening a ketchup bottle or something like that.
Yeah, I remember one of them was like an abduction scene. I'm trying to remember which one that you did. They were trying to pull the person out of the bed. Do you remember that one?
Oh, sure. Well, I have quite a few of them. One was a popular one that he is in there with the Grim Reaper. You know, he's in the bedroom, and the guy is, you know, terrified. And then they're both looking at a map, and they, you know, the alien says, "Well, one of us is at the wrong address." And you know, so who do you choose? You know, do you want to be taken by the alien, or will the Grim Reaper, you know, take you? Another popular one was the alien is dragging the guy out of his room, and he's glued to his laptop, and he's updating his Facebook status. You know,
I think that's the one I was thinking.
That's the one. Yeah, he's being dragged. You can't pull him away from his computer or laptop.
Now, where do you get the inspiration for these?
Luckily, I sit and I stare until beads of sweat, you know, form on my head. But I grew up with Bugs Bunny and reading Mad Magazine and the New Yorker. My process is think of a scene or a scenario, and then put the aliens in that scenario. So, you know, going to the drugstore, playing a guitar, mm-hmm. looking through a telescope, you know, and then you say, okay, what would happen if now aliens were here, or if they meet different characters or historical figures through history? Obviously, they're very strongly connected to Egypt and the pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
a lot of my cartoons were dealing with that. Or Easter Island. That's my favorite subject. There are those famous Moai heads, you know, and then maybe aliens helped construct them. So they make for a very good subject. One I did with the alien and the Easter Island heads was the alien himself is sculpting the head, and the native person looks just like it, you know, with that long head and a huge nose. But he's a little tiny native guy.
Oh, so that's funny.
That one did well.
Yeah. Now, have you ever done the White House lawn? You know, the famous White House lawn?
I haven't done anything yet. That's like the 4th of July you're talking about, right? With the big spaceship overhead.
No, I just wondered if you had done any type of theme of on the White House lawn or with the president or anything like that.
I haven't done one yet. I did a few with you know, like politicians doing a congressional probe, and the obviously the alien is confused by the term probe, and you know the Congress says no, we don't mean that kind of, you know, this is different. I haven't done anything with the president yet. I need to make it. The subject is good, but I have to come up with the gag. That's always that.
Yes.
The gag part is the hard. But I've gotten a lot of suggestions from folks. Like this one, now I'm going to revisit it. And then people write me letters. The last one I got, someone said, I love your cartoons. You know, I really enjoy them. Can you do something about bombing Iraq?
Oh, no.
And I said, well, that's not really that funny. And I don't know what I could do. You know, so some people's humor is very dark or morbid.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah. Have you ever done a cartoon that just, you know, you didn't get any reaction from?
Yeah, I never know what does well. And some I think are going to be, this is great. I'm laughing to myself. And then they just flop.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, and then other ones just do incredibly well. Oh, one that my all-time, you know, best, you know, most hits or shares on Facebook was two aliens are walking out of the UFO. There's a, you know, hapless guy walking his dog. And the two grays are there, and they have giant pea pods on their head, you know, like a pea pods, green pea pods. Mm-hmm. And they just say to the guy, we come in peas.
I remember that. I did see that
and
one.
And I thought it was okay, and it just killed. And people loved it. And I thought it was kind of corny and, you know, kind of punny. And then other ones, you know, I spend hours and hours. Oh, I know the one that I spent a lot of time on it that really flopped. I have Superman fighting, you know, this crazy space monster, you know, kind of like a 1940s, 1950s space monster. And the aliens are floating overhead with their spaceship. And one of them says, my money is on the guy in the tights. I thought it was okay. And it just maybe got like 30 likes and then just kind of faded away.
Oh. Now, did I hear you say earlier that you have a book?
I have 6 books, believe it or not.
Okay.
Yeah. I self-publish, you know, that's the bane of the starving artist. Mm-hmm. You can publish your books yourselves. I'll read you the titles quickly.
Sure.
The first one is The Gray Zone, and then Gray Rights, Gray Trash, Thrifty Shades of Gray.
Gray Trash.
Which is, you know, riffing off the 50 Shades of Gray. Gray Guevara, which was a little bit controversial. And my newest book, which is Gray Spa, like playing off a day spa.
Oh, yes. I saw that with the watermelon on the eyes.
Yeah. You know, because I remember the women like to put those cucumbers on their eyes to make themselves look younger.
Yeah.
Maybe the alien would have watermelon slices.
Yeah, why not?
Why? You know, their eyes are so big. You know, the Gray Trash cover was I chose the protesters. This is going back a year already, but the Occupy movement was, mm-hmm. was really big when I was doing this. And then the aliens are holding up signs, you know, like you know, down with gravity, Chewbacca for president. And then the last one is Gray Rights. And George Takei, am I saying his name
right?
From Star Trek. He loved that cartoon, shared it with his millions of fans, and that was the most exposure I had ever gotten. And I was still quite naive then, and I didn't put my website on the bottom of the cartoon, and I'm kicking myself to this day.
Oh, yeah. He's still very active.
Absolutely.
And I heard him interviewed on, I think it was maybe something like Adam Carolla or something. And what a fun guy he is.
He is so nice and so approachable, and he mentioned my name and, you know, he said, you know, check out this guy's work. And he was very, you know, accommodating. And he has such a good sense of humor about his time on Star Trek and aliens and mashing up Star Wars with Star Trek. One Star Trek cartoon I did was the aliens are going to a Renaissance festival. And they are all dressed up as Star Trek characters because to them that would be the past. You know, that's that's their Renaissance. You know, the Star Trek.
So you almost have to think a little bit in some of your cartoons.
I think so. Hopefully, and then look, most of them people get it, and you know, you always get that funny line that one guy writes, "I don't get it," and then of course the rest of the internet blog comes in and hammer the heck out of him and explain to him everything about it. I think you have to assume a little bit of knowledge of the subject matter, because when I started doing it, I never heard the term gray.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that they are called grays, and then there are whites who are kind of one of ethereal beings and kind of spiritual. So a lot of the jokes play off the term gray. And another assumption I have to make is that they are known to abduct or mutilate cattle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are attributed to that. So a lot of the gags are with cows. And then people said, what is it with the cows? Why are you always having these cows in the scene, you know, with the aliens? So...
Oh, so people don't know about the cow.
They get it. Like, why is the cow there, or why is he in the spaceship, or why are they chasing after him? Like, I did a scene with the running of the bulls, you know, in Spain. But now the bulls are running away from the aliens, you know, and the aliens are making the horn sign, you know, with their fingers, you know, on their heads, trying to go after the bulls, and the bulls are, of course, terrified.
Oh my God, that's really funny. Yeah.
So, and
you can do a lot of funny things with cows, I imagine.
Oh, you know, it's a great subject, you know, and I don't go a week without putting a cow into the scene. The last one was there's a restaurant scene and all the aliens are having dinner with their bovine companions, you know, in this nice restaurant. And in the foreground is an alien with a sheep. And he's breaking up with the sheep, and he says, you know, it's not me, it's you. You know, spelled E-W.
Oh, jeez.
And it's
well,
just,
you know, I like you because I have a very corny sense of humor. And,
good. Likewise, you know, yeah. I like I'm old school.
Yeah.
Keep it clean. More suggestive than descriptive, and I don't like to show anything, but let people's minds, you know, draw conclusions.
Now, did we say your website yet?
No, not yet. It's www.grayzonecomics.com. That's my website. All my books are available there. And of course, if folks would like to see it on Facebook, they could search for Close Encounters Studios, and then they will see that's my parent company, you could call it. And over there, I put up a new cartoon every day.
Every day?
Every day.
Wow.
Never miss a day.
Is so that right? You never miss a day?
I've never missed a day.
Boy, you know, for anyone that's out there that's listening, I would imagine that would be a real fun thing to check out every single day.
I hope so. And then if you like the page, you know, you'll get it. You'll see it in your feed.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad way. And people say you've cheered me up, and I've gotten very nice fan letters. You know, I had a bad day, and things went wrong. And when I see your cartoons, it kind of turns my day around. So I said, wow, you know, great. You know,
that's kind of the feedback that we get on our Facebook page.
Oh, good.
You know, people will say things like that.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah, yeah. And so... You know, it's always great when someone can make a little bit of difference in some way, you know, and I love the fan mail that we get here for this podcast because, you know, a lot of people like our approach. Some don't. Of course, we always get that, but it's always nice. You know, it keeps us going.
Yeah, absolutely. That comes with the territory. I mean, you're putting yourself out there.
That's right.
And you're going to get, you know, both type of reactions, I think.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how Facebook has changed everything? I mean, that's
it really has, especially for someone like me who's, you know, a nobody in the comic book world. And then I right now I could count, you know, almost 9,200 fans who read it daily, and I could never have reached that on my own. And the traditional publishing route, I would imagine the radio world and film, it's very difficult to break into. And now we have a way to get out there and, you know, skip the middleman. And publish your own book, make your own podcast,
right?
Everything.
Yeah, yeah, it's just amazing.
We're
actually looking into live streaming a show once a month on Facebook.
Oh, that's fantastic. I will link to you. You know, I like that, and that's a big help. I think is when like-minded people are linking together with a common subject or interest or whatever that may be, and boom, that really almost, you know, exponentially grows everything.
Yeah,
and that's what I found.
And this is just the beginning.
Yeah, it's just starting, yeah. You know, you're mentioning the people. There's a young lady in Florida who's such a big fan of the strip. She bought all the books, she got the sculptures, and then she went so far as to have a large tattoo of one of my aliens on her arm. You know, and it's on the back of one of my books. I feature her because that's the highest compliment you could get.
I suppose that's right. Yeah.
And it was her favorite cartoon. One alien is staring at a snake, like a serpent. And he's pointing at the snake, and he says to the snake, "Ooh, staring contest. Okay, go." The two of them are just staring at each other because I don't think either of them blink. So they're just going to have a staring contest. And she loved it so much.
Yeah.
She's going to have the snake on the other arm eventually.
Now, do you copyright every single one of your pieces?
I do. You know, I remember when I was in art school, they said when an artist makes something, you know, you have what's called prior art. You are the owner of it. And it's too cumbersome to – I'll always send in, you know, to the patent and trademark office every drawing or cartoon. But there is an implied copyright, so I add the copyright information on the bottom. I found it shared where people have removed my copyright information and my signature.
Wow.
And posted it, and that kind of stinks. Because
yeah.
I'm happy to share it. And it said, all I ask is put a link back to the website. I said, you could use it whatever you want, you know.
Yeah, that's very generous of you.
You know, I think in this day and age, you have to, I guess, you know, especially now that I'm just starting out. You know, there's no such thing as bad publicity, so mm-hmm. go ahead, you know, take it, share it. You know, and it's funny because sometimes people send me my old cartoons back, like, hey, look at this one. Why didn't you do this? And I said, that's mine. They just took all my information out.
Oh, my God, that is
yeah. Or
it's not really funny, but it's funny.
No, it's tragically funny. Or worse, they'll remove my text on the bottom, the caption, and add something, you know, gross or offensive. You know?
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, and I said, hey, I didn't do that.
If you were a dick about the whole thing, you could just, you know, sue these people.
I guess so, but, you know, it's so hard to prove damages, I don't know what to say. Like, I mean, I think the attorney would cost more than any damages I could get back. I think when you get into the realm of you know, I hate to keep using Garfield or Marmaduke or I don't know, you know, some sort of trademarkable character and he's well known and, the whole thing is worth millions of dollars. At this point, you know, I'm a guy in my room. You know, and then how much is it really worth? You know, maybe for future earnings, I guess, but it's just conjecture.
Yeah.
All artists face that. You know, I mean, look at your podcast. It could be copied or distributed, and you know, not attributed to the artist.
Mm. And I'm fine. I'm actually fine with that myself. You know, like you said, if you know it gets out there. Recently, back in April, I did a little clip with Stan Friedman, basically saying that flying saucers weren't real as a joke, you know, for April Fools.
Right.
And you can't believe how many people took it serious, you know. And I'm going to be seeing Stan in a couple of weeks, and hopefully we're still on a friendly basis.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and this was meant to be a joke.
Yeah.
Now,
have you ever done a caricature, like, say, Stan Friedman in one of your...
I haven't done that yet. I've done a few celebrities. I did a James Bond, like a Daniel Craig, drawing as best as I could, you know, mm-hmm. to capture his likeness, where the bartender is the alien. And, of course, James Bond is ordering a martini, and he wants it shaken, not stirred. That's his famous line. And, of course, the alien is using his finger to stir his martini. And, you know, James Bond looks suitably annoyed.
Yeah.
And I did a few... Captain Jean-Luc Picard cartoons. mm-hmm. He's kind of an easy guy to caricature.
Yeah.
And, he's holding his famous teacup, and there's an alien sticking out of the teacup, and he's yelling at the computer, and he says, "Computer, I said Earl Grey."
That's pretty good.
So that was a popular one. They liked it, and the alien's just kind of sitting in the teacup.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you also have a website. It's closeencounterstudios.com.
Yes, that's another one. That's where the sculptures are available. And that was my first one. So that started out, you know, my sculptures are available there, and then as well as the books. And I put up some UFO and alien news I find interesting. A little bit of history about me, you know, where I, you know, my background. I was an art student in New York City and became a graphic artist for a few years. And now I'm devoting my time to becoming a cartoonist.
Now, getting back to the roots here, do you take the subjects in a serious way?
I believe in the subject. Like, I'm a, you know, I'm a believer in it. I've seen it. You know, mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by it. I'm a little frightened by it. I take it seriously, but I think the fact that it is a serious subject makes for a great way to parody it. You know, it's You know, there are real-life events, and, mm-hmm. and it makes for a wonderful subject. And I like to draw them. You know, I like to draw these guys, you know.
That's pretty obvious you do one a day. Do you actually do one a day, or, like, how do you take time off? Do you ever take time off?
No, and I'll tell you why I'm afraid to, because then, you know, you fall out of a habit. So if I know I'm going to be away or something, I'll do two or three, and then I'll post them, you know, ahead of time. And I'm just going to tell you and your listeners now, I'm working secretly on a secret book where people do not see the cartoons online, and it's called Project Grey Book. And I'm going to put all these cartoons, I think a little bit controversial or a little bit strange, and then they're going to go into my secret book. So sometimes I'll do two or three a day, and I'll put one up online, and then the other two or three I'll scroll away, and they're going to be saved from my super secret book. So if they want to see it, they have to read the book.
Uh-huh. So, Roger, in closing, what would you like to say to our listening audience?
Well, I would like to tell them to come on and read the comics. You know, you're welcome to comment on them. I love to see the comments. You know, many of them get 20 to 30 to 40 comments on them and get the dialogue going. And people really use that to talk about their own experiences that they had. And it's kind of a good venue for all that. So I welcome them to read them. Come on, check them out, see if they like it. Oh, and share them with your friends, of course.
Yes, and we will definitely cross-pollinate our Facebook pages with this podcast.
Terrific.
And we'll grow both pages a little.
I appreciate it. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks so much, Roger.
Thank you so much, Martin. Bye-bye now.
So that's it for our show today. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you go to our show notes, you will see an idea that I had that I gave to Roger, and he actually drew a cartoon. It's getting a lot of action, so that was a lot of fun. So go to our show notes on podcastufo.com. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page. It's a lot of fun. And our forums. Music is provided for this podcast by Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse. You can see his website, carrielloydwhitehouse.com. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you next week. Keep your eyes to the sky.